Chapter 20. 160 feet to the bottom, said Ira Cox, staring into the sinister hole in the ice that marked the grave of the smashed and sunken U-boat. Are you sure you want to do this? Repairs to the Polar Storm's engine room and bridge by the Navy damage control team won't be completed for another 2 hours, explained Pitt. And since the ship carried Arctic diving equipment on board, I can't pass up the opportunity to investigate inside the sub's hull.
What do you expect to find? Asked Evie Tan, who had accompanied Pitt and a small crew from the ship.
Logbook, papers, reports, anything with writing on it that might lead to who was in command and what hidden location she sailed from. Nazi Germany in 1945, Cox said with a little smile, but not trying to be clever. Pitt sat on the ice and pulled on his swim fins. Okay, but where has she been hiding for the last 56 years? Cox shrugged and tested Pitt's underwater communication system.
Can you hear me okay?
You're blasting my eardrums. Turn down the volume.
How's that?
Better. Pitt's voice came over a speaker set up in an operations tent beside the opening in the ice.
You shouldn't be going alone, said Cox.
Another diver would only get in my way. Besides, I have more than 20 dives under Arctic ice under my belt, so it's not a new experience. In the warmth of a generator heater in the tent, Pitt slipped on a Divex Armadillo hot water suit, with internal and external tubing that circulated warm water throughout the entire body, including the hands, feet, and head. The heated water came from a combination heater and pump that forced it through an umbilical hose into the suit's inlet manifold that enabled Pitt to regulate the flow. He wore an AGA MK2 full face mask adapted to wireless communications. He elected to carry air tanks for ease of movement rather than rely on the surface support system. A quick check of his substrobe Ikelite underwater dive light, and he was ready to go.
Good luck,
shouted Evie, to make herself heard through Pitt's hood and face mask. She then busied herself shooting photos of Pitt as he sat on the edge of the ice before dropping off into the icy water.
You sure I can't talk you into taking photos with a watertight camera down there?
Pitt gave a brief shake of his encased head as his voice came over the speaker.
I won't have time to play photographer.
He gave a wave and rolled into the water, pushing off from the ice with his finned feet. He dove and leveled out at 10 feet while he vented the air from his dry suit and waited to see if its heating element was compensating for the frigid drop in temperature. A cautious diver, in all his years of diving, Pitt had rarely encountered problems underwater. He constantly talked to himself, sharpening his mind to question and probe his surroundings, and monitoring his instrument gauges and body condition. Beneath the ice pack, which was a little over 3 feet thick, he found a wildly different world. Staring upward, Pitt imagined the underside of the ice as looking like the surface of an unknown planet deep in the galaxy. Transfused by the light filtering through the ice, the flat, white layer was transformed into an upside-down landscape of blue-green frozen mounds and valleys covered by rolling yellow clouds of algae that were fed on by an infinite army of krill. He paused to adjust the flow of hot water before looking down and seeing a vast green void that faded to black in the depths. It beckoned, and he dove down to be embraced by it. The morbid scene slowly revealed itself as if a shadowy curtain had parted as Pitt descended to the bottom. No kelp or coral or brightly colored fish here. He glanced upward at the eerie glow drifting from the ice hole above to orient himself. Then he paused a moment to switch on his dive light and probe it into the wreckage while he equalized his ears. The remains of the U-boat were broken and scattered. The center hull beneath the conning tower was terribly ruptured and mangled by the explosion from the missile. The tower itself had been blown off the hull and was lying on its side amid a field of debris. The stern appeared attached to the keel by only the propeller shafts. The bow section was twisted, but resting upright in the silt. The soft bottom had embraced the wreckage, and Pitt was surprised to see nearly 20% of it already buried. "I've reached the wreck," he announced to Cox. "She's badly broken. I'm going inside the remains." "Take great care," Cox's disembodied voice came back in Pitt's earpiece. "Cut a hole in your suit from a sharp piece of metal and you'll freeze before you reach the surface." Now there's a cheery thought. Pitt did not attempt to enter the vessel immediately. He spent nearly 10 minutes of precious bottom time swimming over the wreckage and examining the debris field. The warhead had been designed to destroy a much larger target and had left the submarine almost unrecognizable as a seagoing vessel. Pipes and valves and smashed steel plates from the hull lay as if thrown about by a giant hand. He swam over body parts, passing above the grisly remains as if he were a spirit floating over the horrendous aftermath of a terrorist bus bombing. He kicked against the current and entered the crushed hull through the massive, torn opening below the mountings where the tower once stood. Two bodies were revealed under the dive light, wedged beneath the diving controls. Fighting the bile that rose in his throat, he searched them for identification, finding nothing of value. No wallets with credit cards or picture IDs sealed in Mylar. It seemed abnormal that members of the U-boat's crew possessed no personal items.
8 minutes, said Cox. You have 8 more minutes before you must ascend.
Understood. The warnings usually came from Giordino, but Pitt was deeply grateful to the big bear of a seaman for his thoughtfulness. It saved him vital seconds when he didn't have to perpetually stop and shine the light on the orange dial of his Doxa dive watch. Moving deeper into the black of the hull, shining his light into the mass of tangled steel and pipes, he worked down a narrow passage and began examining the rooms leading off to the sides. All were empty. Ransacking the drawers and closets, he could find no documents of any kind. He checked the air remaining in his tanks in preparation for his ascent and the required decompression stops. Then he swam into what had been the wardroom. It was badly crushed on one side of the pressure hull. The cupboard and chairs and tables attached to the deck were smashed and broken.
4 minutes.
4 minutes, Pitt repeated. He moved on and found the captain's quarters. With time running out, he frantically searched for letters or reports, even diaries. Nothing. Even the sub's logbook was non-existent. It was almost as if the wrecked sub and its dead crew were an illusion. He began to half expect it to fade and disappear.
2 minutes.
The tone was sharp. On my way. Suddenly, without warning, Pitt felt a hand on his shoulder. He froze, and his slowly beating heart abruptly accelerated and pounded like a jackhammer. The contact was not exactly a tight grip. It was more like the hand was resting between his arm and neck. Beyond shock lies fear, the paralyzing, uncontrollable terror that can carry over into madness. It is a state characterized by a complete lack of comprehension and perception. Most men go totally numb, almost as if anesthetized, and are no longer capable of rational thought. Most men, that is, except Pitt. Despite his initial astonishment, his mind was unnaturally clear. He was too pragmatic and skeptical to believe in ghosts and goblins, and it didn't seem possible for another diver to have appeared from nowhere. Fear and terror melted away like a falling quilt. The awareness of something unknown became an intellectual awareness. He stood like an ice carving. Then, slowly, carefully, he transferred the dive light and briefcase to his left hand and removed the dive knife from its sheath with his right. Gripping the hilt in his thermal glove, he spun around and faced the menace. The apparition before his eyes was a sight he would take with him to the grave.